All right, this is Slide In Podcast, episode number 47. Great episode today. We talked about how Kelly didn't ruin fly fishing, balancing rods, kind of why Kelly moved to Montana. And we got into, kind of a deep discussion about chasing your dream, you know. I won't ruin too much of it, but good question we got on YouTube that kind of led us into that of pursue your passion while you're young, while it's easier to get away. So found that to be really interesting. I enjoyed it. Hope you all do as well. Couple other things to note. Please like and subscribe. We never say that. Like, subscribe, and share it with a friend. We are right on the brink. We're tracking to get 1 million views right before a year of podcasts. So I think share it with a friend. We'd love getting new listeners, get some more views on this thing. But it'd be really cool to hit 1 million listens before we hit a year. That'd be great. Share it with a friend, like, subscribe. Lastly, this episode is brought to you by the Kelly Inn, which resides in West Yellowstone, just a few hundred feet from the National Park's entrance. While they're open year-round, the shoulder seasons, April, May, September, October, even maybe November, are the perfect time to visit. The Madison inside the park is now open year-round, which means you can fish streamers at dawn, then be back in time for a hearty hot breakfast with the family. One of the best parts about the shoulder seasons is being able to explore the park while the crowds are light and the animals are active. The streamer bite tends to be more consistent during these months as well. I actually know yesterday there was a sow and two cubs, grizzlies, in Barnsville, which is, a 4-minute drive from the Kelly Inn in West Yellowstone. So it's a great jumping off point for really the mecca of the fly world, between Idaho, Wyoming, Montana. Just a great spot for all that. And, you know, if you are with a family, I mean, we've got lodging here at the Slide, but very little, and we're constantly sold out. Especially if you're showing up with a family, you want to go to restaurants, you know, you're going to go into the park. It's not just fly fishing. The Kelly Inn is the place to stay. So use promo code SLIDE2025 for 15% off your stay. The Kelly Inn, family-friendly comfort, world-class fishing, all in one spot. Once again, that's SLIDE2025 for 15% off your stay at the Kelly Inn. Thanks, and enjoy the episode. All right, welcome back to episode 47 of the Slide In Podcast. I'm Braden Anderson. That's Kelly Gallup.
Welcome back.
We've got a great show for you today.
Really big show.
Do you want to start by calling out that stuff you got sent?
I didn't get sent. Dan brought it to me. Seems how this is more living proof that I, but possibly Michigan did, but that I didn't ruin fly fishing. Because this is a 1930s F7 flatfish, but is designated as the fly rod flatfish. One of the biggest selling lures in the history of the world, mind you. Oh, I shouldn't have shook it up in the box so much. But this is the one, for those of you that didn't grow up gear fishing, this is hooked here and it just wobbles back and forth. It's just, it is the perfect wobble. When it's in the water, it just goes back and it dives like this, kind of comes down.
Let me get a still of that real quick for our YouTube people. There we go.
But it is Don Connor. We've talked about his wife, Vicky. She's a great artist. You can go out and see Connor Studios and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But these, she does tons of stuff for us.
I'm going to show, well, that's just her business card. But yeah. We got these brown trout stickers from her forever.
Did you just have those sitting there?
Yeah. Yeah, just out of there. I wasn't sure if they gave you anything that you wanted to talk about.
No, I just, Don came in.
Look at that thing, huh?
Oh, I know. Crazy.
So cool. Yeah,
she's, I'll put a she's such a great artist. But he brought this because this is designated as the fly rod size. So that's a little bit before I was born, about 30 years. And so, I didn't ruin fly fishing. And then he also asked me if, and I can't remember what the name of this spinner is, still got mono in it, and had a couple guys from Michigan in here today, and we were talking about, he grew up in the UP, everybody fished these.
Yeah.
And if you went into a tackle shop, any place on earth, you would see these spinners. They were just like, you slide this little tiny It's got this little spring right here.
Yeah.
Put a hook over it, and you put whatever you want on it. Or you put a fly on it.
Yeah.
You can do anything.
It's kind of genius.
A lot of people put flies on. They probably sold 100 million of these things. I'm not sure this is a Michigan thing, but it might be. But at any rate, and he was talking about how he uses flies on it, and for bass in particular. I just hooked a Aberdeen long shank hook, and we'd put a minnow or a night crawler or a worm behind it.
Yeah.
Deadly.
Yeah, I bet.
And then my buddy Richie, I want to talk about that for a second. Richie Strollis just, Richie's a MFC tire, right? And he sent me a box of flies. These are Ultra Egos, but his, and there's just, I'm not talking dirt on any other. I mean, you have to have commercial flies, but there's still a handful of cats in this world, like Rich Strollis, Catching Shadows is his deal if you go online. Actually sent me a Catching Shadows thing, but he also sent me the state police, which Richie was a state cop, and he took that off the day he retired off his jacket and sent me that one.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's so badass.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Rich is the guy who wrote the thing that said, if you see the big bald guy fishing, he doesn't want to talk to you. My favorite line ever. But what I was thinking about with that is there's only a handful of these people out there. We get calls to the shop all the time. You know, well, particularly when I do it, you don't want me to do it. You want Kyler to do it. But custom tie for him, right?
Yeah.
And Rich still does custom ties for people.
Mm.
And there's a handful. There's not many, though. Not many people out there that...
I feel like there's a lot of people that do it for a little while.
Yeah.
And then stop doing it because it is massively time-intensive. I imagine it's very difficult to make a product. It's kind of a labor of love.
Nobody wants to pay the price to have somebody sit down and work for them for hours. But if you're that guy, then, you know, but if you want that... And that, what I was getting at is the first thing that Kyler said, or Chuck it was, I mean, he looked at this... the green ones, and he goes, look at the blends of the hair. Well, that'd be really hard to do for a commercial tie. I mean, right. To do that kind of stuff, sit down, stack your hairs together and get them blended so it's not a blob here and a blob there, it would be really hard to do. And so, but there's still if you seek them out, I mean, Rich is just one of, I only know two or three guys that do it anymore. It's kind of a gone thing.
There are a bunch. That kid I fished with, Jonah, a couple times, he still does it. I can't remember. I'll try to plug it. And then that
it's just kind
of
cool.
One of Matt's friends from Michigan does the hogtied flies.
Yeah, yeah.
Although I think he's in grad school right now, so I don't think he's doing
it. Yeah,
a lot like
Hunter. He started doing that when he was in high school.
Kyler did too.
Did he?
Yeah.
Yeah, website?
Yeah.
That one that Hunter had was better than ours for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, Hunter's a great tire.
I should fire him for that.
Wasn't he? He was tying bugs for people when he's like 12 or 13.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean.
He's a better tire at 12 than I'll ever be.
Yeah, I was going to mention that, but I wouldn't say it on screen until I looked at that fly.
Yeah, you would.
Until I looked at that fly. But no, I think it's cool that there's still people out there that are doing it. But thanks, Richie. That was really cool. And he sent me a bunch of pictures and stuff of me and Johnny and him fishing and of Dudley.
Dudley
because
dog.
Dudley was in the boat in every fishing trip ever.
Yeah.
And so that was cool.
No, that was cool. All right, let's jump into some questions. This one is on YouTube. It's from RomeZ12. And it's sort of similar. I meant to get it in last week when we were talking about kind of rod balance and animating fly rods, but we just jump into it now. He says, hey, guys, love the pod. My question is, does Kelly have a preference or tips on ideal rod balance? I don't see this covered much when looking for info, as most just say within an inch of the end of the cork. I have a few different rods and reels and feel like they all balance at different points, especially with heavy grain lines or super light reels. If my line is strung through the guides, my balance point is 1 to 2 inches up on the blank in some cases. Is this terrible or just less than ideal? Thanks.
What's his name?
Rome? I don't think it's his name,
well,
but yeah, Rome.
So Rome.
Maybe.
Actually, I haven't heard that question a lot lately. I used to hear it a lot, particularly when in the old days when the reels were heavier. But first thing you have to realize is that this thing of balancing a rod in your hand is dumb, right? Yeah. Force times velocity and all that crap. When you're the balance in the rod is when there's line being projected. So to hold a rod like this, and I used to tell people, if you really want to know, go up on the building 30 feet in the air and see what's balanced, because you're going to cast 30 feet of line, 20 or 30 feet of line. Well, you want it to be, you want that to balance in your wrist. For me personally, you know, it's like a metronome. You want the weight down here so the rod swing is easier. And we had this huge push forever with...
That would kind of contradict light reels, right?
Completely.
Yeah.
Everything went to these super light reels. Well, then what did the Euro guys do? They put weights in the rear end of the rod. Yeah. So it makes...
You know what this is? This is a scam by big fly fishing to get you to pay an extra $40-$50 to get the weights for your reels, right? It's just...
I get it, right? But I get the whole... scam, but
I say that tongue-in-cheek. Slidein.com.
The point of that is that the swing weight has to be calculated into the weight of the reel. When I designed the Hardy reel, the first thing, you know, they were saying, we're looking at other reels, and they said, well, we could make it lighter. I says, not on my reel. I want it heavier. I want that, because particularly I'm throwing, and it wouldn't matter if you're throwing a sinking line, if you're throwing a floating 7, 8, 9, anything like that. You know, people are trying to get weight off of their arm, which you're talking about an ounce, for God's sakes. You know,
fix your
do
form.
Some more shoulder work. Yeah,
fix your form.
Yeah.
Don't let your elbow away from your body.
Exactly. And so, but to that point, you know, when I was working with Hardy, I said, no, I want to beef up the reel. I want it thicker in the frame. I want it this and that. I'm all for a little bit heavier reel. And, you know, it is in particular when you run a sinking line, mm-hmm. or you know, or even, I mean, well, even in the spay world, which is not probably because you're two-handed, but I mean, the reels are pretty big. But it is if you don't calculate your line speed and the weight of the line and the increased weight of the line from the speed of the line, mm-hmm. if you don't calculate that into it, there's no way to just sit. I've seen a lot of things where people say, just put it in your hand. If it sits there, it's really well balanced. Well, until you start casting.
You strip line out the end, and then it tips.
That is just so dumb. And then we went through this phase where we had, and it's ironic that the phase came out at the same time the graphites were getting faster and faster, and the lines were getting heavier and heavier, mm-hmm. and we're going lighter and lighter on that end. And it really should be quite the opposite.
Yeah.
I mean, for rod swing, the heavy, it's just like a metronome. I mean, it goes back. You don't see a little pissant BB at the end of the bottom of a metronome going back and forth for your timing.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
So why would, it would be lighter. Maybe it'd go faster. Yeah. Well, that's not the point.
Yeah.
The point is to usually go slower, but.
Always. I've been teaching a lot of people spay casting over the last couple of weeks. I've been helping the boys out here, and Tim from Firehole, we floated yesterday, and everybody,
didn't Tim designate himself as the world's worst streamer fisherman?
Yeah.
Remember?
He's not.
He's not.
Yeah. He's not.
I've seen him fish.
That dude can throw it.
Yeah. Yeah. He just, a stripper. He was a line puller.
Yeah, yeah, he's a rope puller. Yeah, apparently he got in the water with Chuck and Jake, and the first thing they go, oh, he's a rope puller.
But anyway, you're teaching him.
Yeah, so teaching everyone to cast, and like the thing I find myself repeating the most is, okay, now go 25% as fast.
Yeah.
Or you know, a quarter as hard. You know, whatever it is, like everybody wants to be so fast, and they think that's where power comes from. Power comes from loading your rod, and oftentimes loading your rod.
If you're going to be really a fat, slowly. Cast fast on your back.
Yeah.
Get the line so it's not hanging out there.
Yeah. Well, and what John Jurasek said this to Brian Gregson at the casting event up there. I went right after Brian Gregson, and I'm watching him, right? And he does two good casts where he ended up, you know, 104, 105, something like that. And then Jurasek says, this next one I want 80%. 80% is more than 100%. And then he laced out a 114.
Yeah.
Like it's...
And John's one of the best casters I've ever seen in my life.
John is outstanding. So yeah, that going back to this kind of real weight thing, I did hear an interesting thing. I'll talk about the spay world in a minute, but Chuck's buddy Parker, you remember his brother Fisher, mm-hmm. is the guy who interviewed you. I think he works for Outdoor mm-hmm. Bozeman, or he's yep. a great author. Parker, super fishy dude, he prefers light reels because, especially with his dry fly stuff, he said streamer stuff, he likes them a little heavier. Dry fly stuff, he wants a really light reel because he thinks your feel is then in the end of the rod and you've got more feel up top. I just thought it was an interesting perspective. I've always sort of preferred heavy reels. Now I run too light of a reel on my 7-weight just because that's what I bought and that's what I'm running.
You have a Flugger now, a gift from Alex.
Yeah.
Yes. It's not that much heavier.
No, but I thought that was an interesting...
I could see that. You'd have to be pretty good to get that.
And he's really good. And relating it to the golf world, I always preferred a very light shaft. A lot of people ran really, really heavy shafts. I like to have the weight in the bottom of the club because to me it was a feel thing. But I think
that would be counterintuitive because it would be kind of what he's saying then. Because
yeah.
The weights, but the swing weights at the end.
The swing weights at the end. Yeah. But it's more
kind of what he's saying. I can see where he would say.
I can't figure out if it's the same or if it's opposite. Because your metronome, you know, like your weight's on the bottom, theoretically. And with a rod, your weight's, you know, gravity-wise, I don't know. I'm not a physicist. I've made that pretty clear.
But I can see both sides of that. But what I said was, you know, I said, I tell people, go stand on a billy and let the line off. Mm-hmm. So I would love to have, we're going to interview John when we get the new studio thing going, but how often he casts more than 40 feet, right? So
John Jersey.
Yeah. So if you were to go 30 feet as an average, right? Yeah. Which by the way is 48 feet because you got rod extension and your leader. So right there, you got 18 feet without blinking. Mm-hmm. Right? Just put your rod out to where you stop your rod, which I assume you stop right here. Mm-hmm. So it's out 6 or 8 feet. And you got 10 foot a leader or 12 or whatever you do. So then you got your fly line. And that's what I would tell people. That's where you should know it's feel. To me, I would have 20 feet hanging off that rod.
Yeah.
You don't have to let it sink. You can take it and wrap it in a circle and hang it off your rod tip. You don't have to stay on the building. Right. I heard it so many times. Well, I don't know where I could get it. I said, it's a joke. You can wrap a freaking line in a ball. Go like this. If you want to have... If weight is that, but I always go back to that metrodome thing where it's going back so smoothly. Now but none of it's, you know, there's a lot of shit going on in there.
Yeah.
Nobody, you know, you look over here and you're shit going on. In that perfect world, I would defer, I mean, to me, that's always been what I said. Sorry about pounding my mic there. I've always said it should be in that 20, 30 foot range out. And you can, if that concerns you,
I don't think about it that much.
No, I don't really ever. But when the light reel showed up, that was a big thing. I would like to ask John that question because he would probably feel, or Bruce Richards, or one of those super cats. I mean, I fish cast, you know, and I'm never thinking about my cast. I just go right there, I'm fishing here. But I don't go and...
Kelly's a very good caster that doesn't give a shit about it.
I probably could be. I'm just not. I mean, you have to... To do that, you have to practice casting
a
lot.
You're not a casting pond guy.
No.
You like fishing. Practical casting.
I wish I did... Bruce Richards tried in the 70s or 80s to get me when I was still a musclehead. And he tried to get me to... He said I had good... principles, and he could refine them and make me, you know, really good. And I did it for a while, and I realized I'm not fishing it. Anything that took me, if I had 2 hours to, because I lived near water all my life.
Yeah.
I mean, all my life. If I had 2 hours to kill, I'm going to go practice fishing with the potential of something biting it.
Right. Yes.
I'd be right there. And I did it for a summer. He told me that I had to carry 70 feet on my practice cast before shooting. Then later he says, that's bullshit. I never told you that. He told me that. And I'd be out there trying to hold like 6 casts in a row at 70 feet. And the wheels would just fall off that wagon. And then I'd want to shoot it, and then I'd, muscle head, right. Watch this. Mongo push it harder.
Mongo throw football, not Ben Fly Rod.
And so, but it did, and for the little period that Bruce would work with me, he did finally say, I don't think I can help you. I said, well, you're the one that said...
And then, is that because he tried to give you some constructive criticism and you threatened to beat the shit out of him?
No, I would never do that. No. Never be mean. But I just didn't... The time thing, right? Yeah. Because then I would go fishing. The only time I would ever throw a 60, 80 foot was steelhead fishing.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, I could always do that. Right. And that's all I needed to do. Period. So it wasn't functional for me. But I really... And so, now that I'm, older than dinosaur shit, I like to sit out on the lawn and cast.
Yeah.
I do. But I like to do, like, try to hook casts around the corner of the building or some shit.
Yeah,
it's still functional for me. But,
yeah, it's...
But I, you know, when you're a good caster, you're a good caster. It doesn't matter, short game, long game. And you have to be that person to understand swing weight of that rod. Yeah. You have to understand, so... Is it Fisher that we're talking about?
Parker.
Parker.
Parker was the one telling me that.
Parker obviously is a really good caster.
Yeah.
And it's innate. He's a good caster. And that's where you would know rather. I do not golf, as we've already figured out. I did. I loved it for a little time. But I watch golf all the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, but I also watch billiards. I just think that's cool shit, too.
Yeah.
But not very often.
Watch cornhole?
Not very, probably. Yeah. I hardly watch TV. But I mean, the point is, I love to watch golf for the one reason that they are the best of the best. And I guarantee you not one of them would hit. If you were sitting there, they'd all have a different opinion. I mean, why are there so many different clubs to a different swing style? The Europeans were over here, and I was watching that Ryder Cup by the... God, we were assholes during that thing.
Yeah. But
Jesus, I thought this was supposed to be the sport of gentlemen and all that kind of shit.
Oh, it's divine.
I heard some shit come out of that gallery. That was like, are
fuck
you kidding me? Why is... Why did somebody go kick that guy's ass? What a bunch of bags in there. Nobody go piece of shit up.
My buddies... I can't remember where it comes from, but their nickname for Rory is Soy Boy Rory.
Still.
That's not a nice thing to say to someone, calling him Soy Boy.
There's a lot of you just don't. I mean, and the whole thing right before he's going to putt and all that, but I digress.
Yeah.
But the point was, every one of those people has a different swing style.
Yeah.
I just told you, I guided a Tiger's swing coach, that's what he told me. Never verified it. We said he was a swing coach for him and I don't remember, but it wasn't like, it was like just an iron or something. I mean, that's his thing. And I'm certain that if people at that level, or, you know, you got a Steve Rajeff or a Howard Crosston or a Bruce Richards, you know, John Jurasak, there's so many great casters.
Yeah.
I mean, I've spoke, I think, in almost every Brian O'Keefe.
Yeah.
I've spoke at so many clubs in this country and others, and there's always someone that is just like, wow, holy smokes, that's some. And I'm sure that if we put this five of those, six of those guys in the same room, of the guys I just mentioned, that there would be a different opinion on all of it.
Yeah.
But you got to be at that level. Before you have a swing coach, you got to know how to swing.
Right. When I read this question, I went, well, I remember what Parker said, and I haven't thought that much about it, and I don't think I've cast nearly enough rod and reel combinations to really have a developed opinion on it.
Yeah.
I mean, I throw very few fly rods. I throw mine. Every once in a while, I'll throw some others. But it's not like, that's not the first thing I think of is, oh, man, this rod's out of balance.
I've probably thrown every modern rod in history of the world.
Yeah.
Owning a fly shop as long as I have. And I walk out. You've seen me do it 100 times.
Yeah.
I walk out, I go, oh, it's another stiff rod.
Yeah.
Oh,
well, a lot of the time you don't even get out to the freaking parking lot. You hold it here and you go, yeah.
Everybody's doing this whole, you know. Yeah. Rocking bullshit, and that's what drives me crazy. And it was part of the $1,000 rod and the $250 rod and all that stuff. about people go to the parking lot. There was a guy, J. Kennedy Fisher, had an ad in a magazine 100 years ago, and I think it didn't do him any good. And it was this beautiful fly shop, brick building, as I recall, and there's a Mercedes and a Beamer and a Bourbon, Suburban there. And there's a guy standing there with this perfect 35-foot loop. Perfect.
Yeah.
And the caption says, "My rods won't go the distance."
That's great.
And it was a in-your-face dumbasses that you don't need a five-weight that casts that you can throw. But every guy that walks out does this rocking thing and looking backwards. I hate when people look back. Yeah. I wish you'd, in distance, I wish they would stop it. You don't get to do that shit when you're fishing.
No.
And so.
But no, who's trying to throw 150 feet when they're fishing?
Exactly. So you take.
I separate it. They're two entirely different things.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But you don't come in to buy a new Sage fly rod and take out your four weight and strip every freaking inch of that fly line off. So, and every person told me the same thing. Well, I just got to see how it performs. So when you go up and then you start fishing at 20 feet away, 30 feet away, like you do,
right?
The thing isn't like what it was out there. It's a piece of shit. It's too stiff. I'm not saying that about Sages or anybody, but every rod that people would do, they take every one. And they would just overpowering this thing. And what happened next? Everybody started blaming the fly lines. So what happened? Everybody started lying about the freaking fly line. So the goddamn fly line is now a seven weight for a five weight to bend the rod that was too damn stiff. You could have went like this and standing right there and put it on the freaking shelf like I do frequently. Yeah, nice rod. It's beautiful for somebody that wants to cast 100 feet. Mm-hmm. But it's an 8.5 foot four weight.
Yes.
When the Sage came out with the zero weight, a really good friend of mine, who is one of these guys with the, you know, master ego, and he came out and he starts stripping. And it was the one they had called a beaver tail. It had a reel that fit to the butt of the rod. And it screwed on, and there was, if you took that off, you're screwed.
Yeah,
couldn't
put
another reel on it. Huh. It was all part in one piece. And he strips off like 60 feet of line. I go, it is a zero weight. Zero.
It's a creek.
It's made to fish a creek from like 10 feet from you.
Mm-hmm. With no fly line.
It's like,
turn a leader over.
Maybe you're 20 in. Foot of, yeah, yeah. With your leader.
Yeah.
And I go, what? And he said that to me. Well, I got to see how it performs. I says, do you take that piece of shit Porsche out and go four wheeling with it to see how it performs?
Right.
How stupid is that, right? That's another digression. It doesn't matter. But it's, you got to be pretty good to know that. But to balance, I personally don't. I don't want it to be a clunk in my hand.
No.
You know, I don't want it to be like, holy shit, this is a lot of weight. But I don't want it to be not feel it at all. And I think the Eurocats figured it out. I wish Howard was here. We could ask Howard.
Yeah. I think with Euro, it's similarly important, like it is to spey fishing, because like when you're streamer fishing, I think it can be important too, but like dry fly, right? When you make your presentation and then you have slack, right? Ideally, you have slack in your system.
Before it hits the water.
It really matter too much where your rod tip is as long as it's somewhat low. And ideally, you're not making a ton of presentations, right? It's like make your cast, hopefully catch your fish, a couple casts, whatever.
Curves in your leader before it hits the water.
Right, all that stuff, right? But when you are Euro nymphing, you need tension. Right?
I get that. I thought it was more for holding the rod than it was their casting.
I agree. It's the fishing aspect, right?
And I've never fished one of those weighted rods.
So no, but I think it's the same for, so what I'm getting is, I think it's the same for spey fishing that it is for Euro, that you want to have that properly weighted rod to be able to climb the tip so that you can hold it up and keep tension, right? That's where the balance is really important. If in dry fly, maybe in streamer fishing, it's not as important when you're not constantly trying to keep a level across, really smoothing. Like spey fishing, guys like to have heavier reels. I personally oversize my reels on spey rods. I throw a lot of the time a Reddington Cromer 12.5 foot seven weight with a 9-10-11 behemoth on it. It's a fucking monster reel.
Sure.
And what that does is it means that tip is not falling to the water. It's, you know, I can adjust my balance point on that cork.
Is that for the swing or is that for the cast?
It's for the swing. Climb. It's for the swing so that I'm not fighting to get the tip out of the water.
Yeah, so it's
so that I can like, keep my running line elevated if I need. It's about the fishing.
Kind of like the Euro thing. It's just, so it's going through and.
But that's the other thing I've noticed, which is weird. I've thrown a lot of spay rods now with a lot of different reels. The weight of the reel changes my cast massively.
I could see that with that.
A heavier reel, some rods, you know, I've gone too heavy. Some rods I've gone way too light. And, you know, at the end of the day, from the fishing perspective with a spay rod, like I've got this 15-foot Hardy I've been fishing for steelhead now. And I had a Spayco reel on it. It was really heavy. It was 4 1/4. And I switched over to the Hardy Marquis, who Jake from Hardy and someone else both called it the Marquis. That can't be right. Marquis. It's got to be the Marquis, right?
They are Hardy.
Yeah, I know. But I'm going with Marquis. I can't call it the Marquis. So that reel, it's the biggest one they make. It's the Salmon 3.
Don't yell at me, Jake.
Sorry. It's the biggest one they make, and I don't think it balances that rod out. I mean, it's too light. I still like. I actually like casting much better with that lighter reel.
That rod, that reel to me was always a trout reel. And I don't what size is it?
It's that. It's called the Salmon Number 3.
Oh,
it's
okay.
The Marquis Salmon. Yeah. Yeah. So it's a big one, but I like casting with it better than I liked that heavier Spayco. Now this reel doesn't balance out the weight. So I just slide my hand up a little bit,
mm-hmm.
Then it balances. And I'm above the cork, but I don't mind that at all. So it's at the end of the day, it's all personal preference.
I migrate around in my grips sometimes, just depending on, not very often, but sometimes.
That's actually a good question because I was thinking about this. Does the designation of fishing, like, whether you're streamer fishing, dry fly fishing, nymphing, dictate where your hand is on that rod? So I think people overlook grip a lot. I think it's a lot more important.
I think if you, well, grip's huge.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of jokes about that. there.
Sorry, Mom.
Yes. There's, I migrate, I think, you know, when as soon as I said that, I was thinking about the whole weight of the reel. Like when we go fishing and you pick up my rod or Jake picks yours, whoever grabs what, nobody goes, oh, I can't fish this. It's like that. Yeah. And when I pick, you know, one that's doesn't, I don't like the way it feels in my hand. I mean, I don't have to cast it. I just go, what the, and you migrate your grip and you just slide, you know, if you want to be, you know, you want more tip swing, you can go, you know, back, whatever you do. But I think it just kind of happens automatically.
Pause.
So where were we?
I don't remember. We were talking about... We had a minor interruption. Somebody showed up late.
Yes, not happy.
So we don't know where we are. We're talking about swing weight and fly fishing and... rod, space stuff.
You were just, I was saying about migration on the reel. You know, when you get into, at a certain point, you just automatically migrate up that handle to make it feel right for you, for your swing, for your whatever. Now that can be a problem on certain grips. I don't see it so much on cigar grips, that can be a real problem. But I don't really see people doing too much of a migration. They kind of just get used to what's there on a dry fly rod like that. I mean, you should kind of pick the rod up and know right away, but you'll figure it out.
I feel like I migrate my grip probably for no reason, but on streamer rods especially, like I'll kind of start in the middle of it, and as the day gets later and later, I go higher.
Hmm.
I don't really know why. So a lot of time,
so you want to work harder. That's strange.
Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe it's because my reel's too light on there that I'm trying to find balance by going higher. But I find a lot of the time I have a finger on graphite.
Hmm.
Like I'm up on the very top of it. And then
I've seen guys that cast that way that are pretty good at it with their finger forward, but I could never do it.
And grip-wise, like, some people teach with techie dry fly stuff, you know, the pointer finger up on the back of the rod, right? Where mm-hmm. basically if you were to hold your hand up, your palm is facing your target. Jurasek was telling me, you know, of course he gave me this tip right after I made my distance casts in that competition. He said, you need to change your grip for your back cast versus your forward cast. What are you talking about? But apparently, you know, the pro guys, as they cast backwards, they anchor. They like fishing rods with fighting butts for this and the distance stuff, which I think all the guys who beat me in that distance comp were throwing an 8-weight Douglas with a fighting butt, and I was throwing a 5-weight Orvis. Yeah. I threw a heavier rod today. I think it helps. But you plant that fighting butt kind of in your, you know, forearm, almost in your mm-hmm. wrist on the back cast with the back of your hand facing your target, you know, on the way back. And then you rotate your grip to have your thumb on the top of the grip pushing forwards on the way through. And it helps, like, drive your forward cast forwards. And then, you know, that anchoring the butt against your arm launches on the way back. That is distance casting, nothing else. I would never do this in a fishing situation. Say,
I'd love to see that happening.
Well, actually, when I backhand cast, like when I backhand cast streamers, mm-hmm. you know, if I've got a downriver wind and I'm thrown to the right bank, then I do jam that, mm-hmm. the butt of the rod into my arm to get a little more leverage on that. So,
but you're actually casting it.
Yeah, I'm casting. That's
your delivery cast.
Yeah, delivery cast.
Yes.
So there's some practical application, but I thought that was a good question. Thanks for asking that.
Got a lot of mileage out of it. A
lot of mileage. All right, this next question comes to us from Jay Dutcher on YouTube. He says, question for the pod. Can Kelly talk more about his move from Michigan to Montana? How did he choose the Madison over other fisheries out west?
That's it. Simple. It's the best. No.
He also said, I look forward to the pod each week. Fellas, but I figured we didn't.
You know, the move from here to there was a little bit. There's just, and some people have always asked, they ask me all the time, do you miss Michigan? I say no. But that's not true. I miss that. The diversity of fishery there is unparalleled, I think, in the world. And I do miss the shadows and things. But I think, you know,
the shadows.
There's trees everywhere.
Gotcha.
And the rivers are shadowed. And there's a mystery to the rivers that you don't have in big freestones or big tailwaters in some most cases. It was getting really busy. And when I came out here for the first time in the 70s to see Chet, and this is the first big river I fished when I came here. And the park was first in here. And then, so a lot of it had to do with just, you know, but I didn't move out for a long time after that, 20-some years. But the lure of the West is the lure. If you get off a plane, drive down here, and you don't get it, you'll never get it. It either touches you the second you hit down. It's like big powder, but anything. It either grabs you or it doesn't.
And it's the moment I hit the lower Madison Canyon, bear trap.
Yeah.
The moment I hit there, I went, I don't think I can ever leave.
Yeah.
And then I moved here a year later.
It took me 20. I was sitting down at, I was sitting with my first wife. I drove out here. I had a job at Shell Oil, and I, really good job. And I sat on that, I'd fished for 10 days, I think. And I sat on that rock. I can't really remember now. I think at that point I was at Marigold's. But I might have been on the big rock down below, just before the confluence, all is below Reynolds. And I was sitting there, and I just had an unreal day, you know. And that wasn't even a day, it was like 4 hours. And I was sitting there, and I kept looking up at that range, Sheep Mountain there. And I said to my ex, I think I'm going to stay. And she convinced me. She was pretty used to spending all that Shell oil money. And she had a giant, she had like, when I left the house, I remember counting her shoebox. She had 78 shoeboxes. And that's only in her summer closet. It's like a 20-foot closet. And I was like, wow. But anyway, I finally convinced me I had to do what was right and go home and put in my 2 weeks, blah, blah, blah. And halfway through Nebraska, I said, I'm never going to get back there. And I knew. I sold out. And so, but then I just kept coming out here and coming out here and coming out here. Back when, and then when the Bighorn opened up in 82, that was frightening. And then nobody was on the Mo. Go up to the Mo and see nobody. And it seemed like that was going to be that way forever.
Yeah.
And so then I'm coming off of 100 boats a day going down the Pier Marquette. And there's guys, I had a guy ask me what I was doing at a landing one day that I made. I said, you weren't alive, you piss ant, when I built this son of a bitch. And so it was just like, there was just too many rats in the cage. But it had nothing, that wasn't as big a deal because, you know, I was one of the first ones back there, about 10 of us, I would say, of the originals. And then there, but it's that allure, and it came. And the Madison, in particular, if you ever drive down Ghost Village Road and go to the end, it didn't used to be the way it is now. It used to be a two-track, went all the way down, it was a boat launch. And you walk up that river, if it doesn't get you, there's no natural thing on earth that's going to get you. Cocaine might be your habit, yeah, because that's the closest thing. You look up there, you know, and it was just, it just called, you know. And so I started looking at lodges, I think, out here in 85. I mean, it was a long hunt, yeah. 15 years. Mm-hmm. So it was...
some pretty good patience.
It had to be the right thing, you know. I looked at a lot of different places, and so... But this one always...
See, I applied to one shitty fly shop and took the job, first job I got offered.
I don't think we really hired you. I think we hired Matt. But might be. Might be you.
I do think you hired Matt. I just came along for the ride.
You know, I had a buddy say to me one time, Jerry Dennis, and I told him, and we were like super fishing buddies, right? We fished, you know, at least once a week, always, just never stopped for years and years and years. And... And Jerry's a writer and very, you know, he speaks very well, unlike me. And I said, you know, but I'm breaking up the band because it's just me and Jerry Wilson and Jerry Dennis, and we just fish together constantly.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, I'm thinking about moving out west. And it was kind of like telling your girlfriend, oh, you know that chick that I said I wasn't dating? I am. And so it was like, I said, you know, I'm thinking about moving out west. And he said, I said, what do you think? And it was pretty astute, really, because he says, well, I think if you're somebody in the Midwest, you're somebody in the Midwest. But if you're somebody in the West, you're somebody. I moved out here, and about 6 weeks later, put me on the masthead and the fly fisherman. Instead of just writing out, I'm like, well, that didn't take long. Must be John wants to come out and fish with you. Fish here. I mean, it was like nothing, you know, it was just, but it, you know, it partly it's just, I just was a little bored. I wanted a new challenge to move out here. And I mean, I already had a really long standing fly shop, big guide business back home. And it was like, I'm 40 something. I'm getting bored. I want to try something new.
Yeah.
And like you said, you know, all my photographs are either from my old photographs, my albums are all on this river or they're on the Bighorn. And I knew I couldn't go to the Bighorn. Mike had already, one of my best friends, Mike Craig, already started Bighorn Angler. And I didn't really want to, that wasn't, the fishing on the Horn was unparalleled, maybe still is, just so freaking busy, but... this was like when I bought this, there was nothing else here.
Right.
I mean, it was a leap to go, you know, wife and three kids, you know, moving to There was one house on the other side.
And for, like, for people that don't know where we are, too, we're 42 miles from Ennis.
Yeah.
And we're, that's what, 30?
A town of 8,000, maybe.
Yeah, maybe 1,000. Back then, it's probably
34
less.
To the gate at Yellowstone. Yeah. But there was nothing here. I mean, remember when Penny and I were driving, we're looking at it, and we drove from Yellowstone back to Ennis at night. It was January. Mm-hmm. There wasn't a freaking light for 60 miles. I mean, it was like, I remember driving by Hebgen and nobody. Bars weren't open. Nothing was open. We were just driving and it was really bright out. And I stopped the car and I'm like, God, you'd die if you were out here by yourself. I said, this is perfect. Look at this. Get it. I mean, this is, and we drove, so what is it, 64 miles back? Didn't see a light till we got, I mean, not a light. Even Danny Delecta was here. There was a few houses, but nobody lived here. Danny was here full time. And they weren't, no lights on their place. They're probably gone somewhere. And basically all the way to Ennis.
Yeah.
It was the coolest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
Freaking 1,000 elk go across the road in front of you and, you know, have stopped. And there's just like this never-ending thing of elk going by. I'm like, holy Marty Stauffer. This is the coolest shit on earth. I haven't seen a light in 60 miles. That's pretty badass, right?
It's pretty addicting to me, and I'm sure.
And by
it's not,
the way, I think we saw like 5 cars.
Yeah. Right,
period.
Right. It's not the same now, but you know, I spent a winter living here at the slide, and it's still pretty desolate in the winter. There's not a lot going on. There's not a lot of rigs on the road.
November.
You still have the elk. I mean, shit! I almost hit a giant bull last night just
Johnny
outside
Ennis. Johnny did too. Just right down here at $3.
See, mine were just outside of Ennis. You know where they always cross right before the flats? Yeah, 2 of them. I saw the first one, I slowed down, and then his buddy came out and hightailed it down the middle of the road trying to run
I hit
away
one last year.
Yeah, I remember that.
It's because Mel was so drunk she couldn't drive. So, well, I remember, it was at Willie and Katie's wedding.
Oh, okay, right on.
You know, yeah. She's, you know.
Well, I remember we got pulled over, and the guy goes, you know you've got a headlight out? And you go, yep, I hit an elk. He goes, got it. You got an appointment to get it fixed? You go, yep, next month. He goes, right on, carry on.
See you later.
Yeah.
Yes, I've been, that got me pulled over a lot. That's okay.
It wasn't the doing 110.
Yeah, well, it's Montana too. But, and by the way, we do have speed limits here.
That was a joke. I didn't do 100.
We didn't, and you always had speed limits. You didn't on the freeways. And that really? Only in the daylight. It was daylight only. If at night you didn't have, what are you looking at? You didn't, you had speed limits. But my daughter, Madison, who was a wild child as a child, well, she's probably still, now she's a mom. She's all grown up. But she got pulled over by Roger, the undersheriff. And here you can drive at 14, and you can drive.
Is like, that still the case?
Yeah.
Okay, because that explains every time I see some kid driving around who hasn't hit puberty yet, that just scares the hell out of me.
It's frightening. So she's 15 then. She can drive. She still can't drive. She can drive with one family member, but I don't think there's a bunch of rules for it.
Yeah, you couldn't have friends in the car.
No friends in the car, one family member, unless your parent was with you or something like that. It's a bunch of little rules. So Madison's going down. She's just crossed Indian Creek Bridge. And Roger pulls her over at 82. I mean, I have no idea she's rocking that speed right now, but I should have. And so she says to me, she goes down, hits this thing, and Roger pulls her over, and Roger calls me right away. He says, hey, just pulled your daughter over. He said, I said, what? And he goes, yeah. I says, you might want to explain to her that 82 is not the speed limit here. And we do have speed limits. It was a long time ago, right?
Right.
And so he said, you know, I told her I don't ever let me catch you do it. And I think it did put a, you know, put a wavelength in her brain that I don't think she, at least outwardly, she said she didn't. But I asked her, I said, what the hell were you doing 82 with your little sister in that car? She goes, rocking out to Beyonce. I says, you can rock out to Ted Nugent or AC/DC, but you cannot rock out to Beyonce. And she's like, ooh, ooh, ooh. Faking it the whole time.
She might be your kid.
Yeah. Seeing her forehead? Yeah. Are you shitting me? No, gigantic.
What were you doing 82? Rocking out to Beyonce. That sounds like
if
some smart
said,
ass
shit you'd hold,
say.
Yeah. If she said just what the doctor ordered, she said anything, Ted?
Yeah.
Good job.
Yeah. A high five and go to your room.
But that's why I moved out here. Just kind of a, it was a challenge thing. It was hard. I mean, we had a really good business in Michigan and, you know, and moved into the shop when it, basically the house was about 400 square foot. That was another thing that Madison said when I was building the big house, the first one.
Yeah.
She says, you know, Dad, love grows bigger in small houses. I said, yeah, but I might kill you if you keep waking me up every night.
That's funny. Oh, that's great. Yeah, there's what you're talking about, kind of when you first step foot in Montana, it either grabs you or it doesn't. And I remember, I mean, before I came to Montana, the girl I was dating at the time, I told her, I think I'm going to go to Montana this summer, and I'm not sure I'm going to come back. And there's this image of it in my mind, and I showed up, and I got in Bear Trap Canyon, you know, just that little bit right by California Corner. And, you know, I fished down there a handful of times. It's not my favorite river. And I was absolutely blown away. And yeah. I remember driving out here and just looking out the window like a kid in a candy store. And I knew in that car, I was before I even fished here, I knew in that car, I think this place is for me. And
where you grew up is much like where I grew up. It's thick.
In a city.
Yeah.
Well, it's rare to have a, well, kind of, backyards are uncommon in Seattle.
Well, you know, but it's thick. There's thick. Trees.
Right? Get outside of town. Gotcha. Yeah.
And, you know, you couldn't see 100 feet in Michigan ever, right? It's just like
trees everywhere. Yeah.
So you got out here in the vista. I mean, I was riding with Bill, guy that moved out with it, made to help things out, and Bill Erdman's our other buddy. Who thinks we like him because we're just trying to steal all his information. But we came around the corner and, you know, that whole Purple Mountains majesty thing. This is one of the mountains because of where the sun sets and where it is and how the long angle at that mountain turns purple, right? It gets that hue to it. And we came around that corner and Bill was a really deep guy. I always called him Kung Fu. He's just way too deep. And he said, you feel it, son? I said, what? It. And he's just staring, and I was staring at the same thing. I go, I think so. He goes, you belong here. I go, yeah, I think you're right. And it was like, here we are. But it was, you know, some people get here and go, that's a big hill.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, that's cool. Oh, is that what a bear looks like? Great.
Some people get here and they look at TikTok.
Yeah.
I mean, There's a great song by Coulter Wall called Bob Fudge. It's named after a legendary cowboy. I'm not sure it's an original Coulter Wall song or if it's a cover, but there's a line in there, you know, it's kind of like the pinnacle of the song, right? It's building the whole time, and then the beat kind of stops, and he says, when I first saw Montana, I knew I would love her.
Yeah.
I'd ride her great plains till the end of my days. Like, that's how I felt. I didn't know that song when I got here, and then I heard that song, I'm like, it resonates. I mean, this place, and now, you know, I think it's the landscape for me. And some of this exists in Wyoming, it exists in Idaho, but it's these massive valleys with the mountain ranges. I mean, they call it the land of the big sky, right? I was so amazed when I first showed up in this valley. And you know, you get over Norris Hill, and you can see the end of the Madison Range where we are, right? We're right in the slot at the end, and it's from there 50 something miles.
I took Billy, my cousin, over to right at the you know, Continental Divide.
Yeah,
the border between Idaho. And it was one of those days where there no disking's going, no agriculture's going on, and I sit and you can see the Tetons.
Yeah.
I said, how far do you think that is? I don't know, 25, 30 miles? I said, about 160. He goes, that's not possible. I says, big rock, dude.
It is a big rock.
It's a big rock.
Yeah.
But you get, and I also asked him how far he thought it was up to the trailhead. I pointed out we're driving into town. 2 miles. It's 9. That's not possible. Yeah, well, get out and walk that son of a bitch. You'll see how possible it is.
Yes, yeah.
And by the way, there's cool. There's little dips, and there'll be ranches down there. And you'll come back up, and you'll see.
I mean, it's the length of the benches. Yeah. Back when I, you know, used to drive Jack Creek Road a lot, it's 10 miles to get to the freaking slot in the canyon.
Yeah. From Ennis. And you look at it, and you're like, yeah, we'll just drive there.
I could throw a baseball over there.
Yeah. So that's what does it.
But yeah.
But that wasn't the draw for me. It was, all of it was, but... It's all-encompassing, but I think mostly it was just, it haunts you. How many people come in our shop and say, man, I've tried to find a way to move out here for 30 years, but, you know, wife and kids and blah, 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 or, you know, just, and I was doing that too. I kept saying, in Michigan, I tell people, oh, I just want to move to Montana. Chet was my fishing buddy. Chet was part of the thing, and he moved out, and he'd send me pictures and shit, and it eats at you. And then somebody came into my shop one day and said, yeah, I wish I'd have made the move. And then, you know, I had so many Detroiters and Chicago guys that come up, and they had summer places up north, right? And, and they would say, yeah, I had a chance. And one guy said it in particular, and I don't remember anything about him. He said, yeah, I wish I would have taken the shot when I had a chance. And it started sinking in. You know, it's like 42, I think I was. And I just went, and I, you know what happened? That really the impetus was that really drove it over is I was here filming during 9/11. And I came over the hill coming out of Jackson, coming down to fish the South Fork, and I'm listening to the radio. And the freaking world's ending. I mean, there's some serious heavy shit going down. And so then I got here and I was filming with Jack Dennis and Randall Kaufman, Mike Lawson, Gene Herring's the producer, and Hammer was there and a bunch of you. Everybody else can leave except me. Everybody gets to go home except me. And I can't. And I got a rental car. And so I thought, well, I'll just stay here and fish, right? And
wait, so sorry, why couldn't you go home?
No flights.
Oh, and they all live within driving distance.
Well, one lived in Camas, Washington. Yeah. Yeah. They all lived right there.
Yeah.
They're coming down the hill.
Gotcha.
And so Gene and Hammer drove home. You know, they're home in 12 hours.
Yeah.
And so I just hung out. Well, it really, you have to have lived through that. Well, that's a disgraceful thing to say. I didn't live through it. I just watched it on TV. The people who lived through it lived through it. But it was a shockwave to every American, maybe every person in the world, what we saw.
Yeah.
And so it really drove it home to me, like, whew, there is a finality. Something you do end at some point.
Yeah.
And I went and got three. I'd already had a, I would look at things always, you know, not the online was barely a thing, but it was there. And I would look, and I would get things from different realtors sent to me. Mm-hmm. And I had three of them from, you should sponsor this, James. It was from Fay Fly Fishing Ranches. And he sent me three things, and I had them with me. Mm-hmm. But it was kind of I'm leaving a pretty good life. Mm-hmm. I'm leaving something pretty...
Yeah, you've got a successful business, you're building a name.
All my friends,
family,
greatest fishing in the world, and it's like, you know.
It's jumping off the cliff.
It is. It was a jump.
A leap of faith, right?
I'm not sure if 9/11 hadn't gone down, if I would have ever really, I was pretty, as Penny, I was always saying this shit, and we're in the kitchen, and one of her girlfriends was there, and I said, I'm going to go look at this lodge in January. And I didn't hear it, but she said that she said to her, I think it was Jane, and she said, you know, I think he's really serious this time. So it wasn't the first time I'd said
right,
it, you know.
Right,
and
right,
she
right.
goes, he seems like he said he's going. And she said, are you serious? And he says, yeah, I'm going to fly out this week or whatever. And so she came with me, and we looked it over, and surprisingly, you know, she loved it too. So And the kids don't count. They're little kids, so they just had to do what they're told, right? You know, like Madison. Don't speed.
Yeah, sure.
Shit, what a little chip off the block. But at any rate, I think that might have been a big driver because that was so...
So just kind of, it hits you that life ends at some point.
Yeah, you only have to watch that sort of thing once and you go, yeah, there's... And then, I mean, I don't know how many times people told me that they wish they would have done this. You know, I'm guiding them and they're like, there's third day and they got to go home and they're like, if I'd have done it when I could have...
Right.
Well, that's always just an excuse. You can do it. You can, you know, you just got to sell.
It's
hard. You got to sell all your shit and hope you don't go broke, you know, and plan to be broke for a while. That's what it is. So that's how it all happened for me.
Yep. There's one other thing I wanted to mention, but it is escaping me at this very moment. All right, let's do one more question. This one comes from Mitchell Fishes on YouTube. He says, hey guys, would love to hear your thoughts on something. I've recently been considering becoming a game warden. I'm a 21-year-old who recently graduated from business school and can already tell that I may want to take my career somewhere besides my field of study. I've looked into guiding and it seems fulfilling, but I'm not sure about making a career of it. However, that's where Game Warden seems appealing. Being outside, helping the places I love, and keeping those spaces in check. Would love to hear your thoughts on this. If you know wardens and their advice, and general community thoughts on Game Wardens from your perspective. Thanks. And then one guy, Tiny B, commented back saying, 30 years ago, I had the choice of buying a drift boat and land in Montana or going to grad school for an MBA. Got the MBA, which turned out to be useless. Biggest mistake I ever made.
Yeah, I'm trying to find the card because the guy who sent me this, and I feel like a jackass.
The one that says Illinois Conservation Police.
Yeah. Oh, my God, and I can't remember his name. I'm sorry. I got a porosity problem. It's called big holes in my brain. but I would say it's, from my perspective, I am so pro-military, so pro-police, maybe more pro-warden, because I fucking hate poachers.
Yeah.
I really wish they would just put him in prison for 20 years. It pisses me off when I see people doing that. And I've got some buddies that are pretty big poachers, which really I just want to beat the shit out of them. But
I won't mention the name, but I remember you talking to one of your friends about, you know, the guy saying his dad's the greatest deer hunter you've ever seen, and he never missed. And you go, well, yeah, he had a salt lick in his backyard, and he didn't hunt during season. He goes, well, yeah, he didn't like the crowds.
I know.
You remember that one.
And it's just, you know, it was whitetails in Michigan. But I would say, I just think it's a really, I know from, I have a lot of warden friends. It's an arduous task. You're not on shifts always, you know.
Yeah.
But it's very fulfilling and it's changing a lot. There's a lot. But nobody can tell you what to do, obviously. But I know very few people who have actually gone to college and came out of college and went into what they studied for. Very few. I mean, lawyers and doctors. And I know a handful of lawyers that made it very short period and became guides. And they just, you should read the book, The Mulligan. It's all about that. About a guy who went to dental school and came out when he, you know, it's just the greatest. I love this book. And he's talking about being in his office and he drills into this abscess and the smell. I could smell it. It was it's a great, didn't we have a, we had that here for a long time. But anyway, The Mulligan, it's a great book. And it just kind of talks about guys that do that, or a guy that did that. But I, you know, I don't, you can always, this is kind of like what we were just talking about moving out here. You can always go back to, you don't always get a chance to be young and come out of school like you guys are doing. You, everyone here's got, he's got big degrees. Matt's got big degrees. John, everybody here's got these big degrees, but they're here fishing.
Do you know Jake was an English lit major?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So is Johnny.
Yeah.
So, but you can always, go back, but you can't, you know, if you go in and you invest deep, that's what all the people would tell me, is that they had a chance when they were young. They didn't take it. Usually my generation is because somebody got somebody else pregnant and they had they had to start a life, right? And I've never met anybody that was pissed off about following their true passion. And I, but I've sure met, I've sat in thousands of boats with people who just hate their life, even though they're incredibly wealthy.
Yeah.
And they get to go to some pretty cool places, but they only get to do that 2 or 3 weeks a year. Some are, you know, able to do it more. But boy, if it was calling me, I would jump young, because it's really hard to do what I did. I was lucky that Penny went along with it, who is my ex-wife, by the way, but still very close. And we got kids. I mean, that's the way it should be. But there's, it's hard to find, to take away from people. You start a life and then you try it, then you say, well, let's change it. You know, well, not everybody has that wild hair up their ass that says, let's jump off this cliff right now.
Yeah.
What do you mean? Let's go. And it's like, I don't think so, dumbass. You're going to go back to work tomorrow morning. And I would encourage you to follow right as early as, it's really hard to do it when you're 40. And you think about it, if you've got a career, you're 10 years in before you even got an idea what you're doing. And then you start making cash or whatever it is that, you know, whatever it is that drives your bailiwick, and you're now you're 20, but you really are thinking about something else the whole time. Mm-hmm. Which I'm always impressed with you guys, that all my staff, or all of them for the most part, Johnny to start it, you know, his deal with his family is that you get the best education money can buy and then you're on your own, so get a good one. Johnny went to school, got out, went right to guide school.
Yep.
Johnny knew when he's 12 years old what he was going to do.
Yeah.
And I think his parents did too, right?
They did, yeah.
Because they encouraged everything, because who gives a shit how much money? If I can't explain how many people that are that I deal with on a daily basis that are so wealthy, I'm not sure anyone would give it up, but they're always talking about shit, you know. Well, and the guy that sent me the books, they said, or the thing for the books, he said, my career got took away 46 years of my fishing life, yeah. And I'm too old to fish.
Right.
Ouch, you know, that's not cool. So, or whatever it is. I mean, I don't give a shit what it is. It doesn't matter fishing, hunting, you know, being a warden. You know, one thing you did say is about, you thought about guiding. Guiding is one of those things where if you're really good, you can do a couple days a week too. I know Jack Ford started like that. Mm-hmm. One of the best guides I've ever seen, right? Jack Ford started, he wasn't full-time. He worked at Ford. I mean, he was a huge, I think he's an exec somebody. I think he was head of like Europe or some shit.
Oof.
He wasn't some, you know, small-time guy, but he worked weekends. He was driven by one of the few people I know in my life who was able to retire and go into guiding full-time without missing a beat. He was in great shape. He could do things. Life has a way of throwing you curveballs, man. Break a knee, do this, do that, and things change. So do it when you're kin.
Yeah.
You can always go back to your whatever it is you were going to do.
You
want to be
back.
A warden? You know, you got to have balls the size of church bells to do it. You're going to get people.
Being a warden scares the shit out of me.
It's one of the most dangerous jobs in the world. That's why I respect it so much.
Absolutely.
And poachers don't tend to be great people. But that's not all you deal with. There's a lot of shit you deal with.
Yeah.
You
know,
a lot of conservation stuff. And I wouldn't, you know, not that I'm some pinnacle you should be listening to, but I would do it young. I would do what I can now. And you've got your degree forever.
From my experience, it's I was supposed to move to Jackson Hole with one of my best friends from college and become a lifty there for a winter right after college. Now, that scared me. I didn't. He did. Mm-hmm. He's still in Jackson. Now he's running nonprofits, and he actually won Lib of the Year last year. You'd love him.
Oh, I can only imagine.
But he's a really good buddy of mine. I love him to death. But we were supposed to go do that, and I bailed.
The way you said that, I think I'm getting to you.
Oh, geez. So it must
be the girlfriend.
Well, I was chasing a girl at the time, and
at the time, that's funny.
And I went into a tech job, and you know, I was kind of chasing that life, right? And I wouldn't have come out here if it wasn't for Matt, who was, you know, fresh out of college or about to be, and said, you know, he skipped his graduation to come out here, start working.
Yeah, he showed up in his car with his mom.
Yeah, well, he lied to his mom and said that because he's in grad school, he doesn't have a graduation.
Oh, he did? Yes. That's even better.
Yeah, I'm not sure they know that. Hopefully they don't listen. But
Matt has 2 degrees in robotic engineering or something?
Automotive engineering. He's a freaking wizard.
Whatever this is.
Smart people think he's the smart guy.
Yeah. Everybody would be like, what the hell is that? Yeah. But when he got out of that car, you had told me what his degree was.
Yeah.
And I said, in front of his mother, when they got out of that little blue car. Yeah, I remember.
Volvo.
Yeah, they drove. And he gets out and I says, what the hell are you doing here? And he says, show my mom how I'm going to waste her money. I was like, holy shit. She just goes.
But yeah, so Matt, you know, Matt and I kind of told the story, but, you know, we saw the slide was hiring. We kind of made a funny application, right?
Dumbest thing I ever saw in my life. Favorite bird.
Yeah, favorite bird, the blue-footed booby. We put a ton of jokes in there, right? We kind of want to be noticed.
Superimposed my head into...
Yeah, it was me and Matt on that. We'd rush the field at a UW football game with two of my buddies, Zach and Corey, and we put Kelly's face over Zach and Corey. So it's two Kellys and us. Like, we were just screwing around. Really made it kind of as a joke. I mean, I was in Zoom meetings all day, just on mute, like screwing around, making this PowerPoint because I thought it was funnier than shit. We'd call each other laughing about it. And, you know, we're like, screw it. We'll throw in the application. He goes, if we apply, you got to promise me if we get the job, we'll do it. And I'm like, sure. Yeah, I promise we'll do it. Thinking there's 1,000 more people qualified that are applying for this. Somehow you guys.
They didn't know my favorite bird.
So we got hired and I had made that promise to one of my best friends, Matt, right? That we would do it. And so, you know, I was managing my team at DocuSign at the time. And I mean, I really had that kind of life rolling. I felt like I was in a good place. But I uprooted because I gave my word to him. And you know, it's not just that. I wanted to come do this, right? Like I'd wanted to come to Montana.
Not the worst briar patch to get thrown into.
No, it's not. I mean, I thought at that point, I was so madly addicted to fishing. I thought maybe I'll go out there for a summer, get it out of my system, and then I can become kind of a normal human again. And that didn't work. But I say all this to, if you're thinking about it and you're in college, go do it.
Yeah.
Your college degree lasts. I mean, you can come out, guide for a couple of years, and then go get an entry-level job somewhere and go back to that life if you want to. It's really, really hard to leave once you've done it for a little while. I mean, I had a hard time pulling up the roots. I would not have done it alone. If Matt had said no, I wouldn't have.
Yep.
But it's, you know, I kind of rolled the dice and got lucky. But definitely, even if you're not, you know, the game warden thing, I think that's awesome. I think you should do it. But if you're considering anything involved with your passion that isn't your degree, go for it. The last thing I'll say is Danny Frank, we've mentioned him before. He was in here, Colorado Trout Hunters, and he was with his buddy Larry. And Larry has been in the golf business for a long time, been really successful. And he's telling us, he goes, look, I worked my entire life. I'm 75 years old. I've had all this success. I worked my entire life to be here for 3 days with my buddy Danny.
Like,
all of this, and I want to be sleeping.
The times we hear that story from a 65, 75, 80-year-old person who lives for maybe a week of their life, but they feel like they had to, this whole give their, you know, I don't get it. I do get it. I just don't. It's tragic.
Yeah.
I mean, to think, you finally retire and you're like, okay, I'm pretty beat up. I'm tired. I don't know if I want to go. Jack Ford's the only guy I've ever seen in my life that did it.
Yeah.
He retired before he's 65, but he's 85, still pulling sticks all day,
yep.
every day, right? I mean, the guy's a machine. Mm-hmm. That's one out of a billion people.
Yes.
One.
Yeah, literally.
I mean,
yeah.
You know, and he's just, that's him. And by the way, the guide life is not for everybody. And
it's not an easy life either.
There's very few people that can make it through to a point of not just being on the river. There's a lot of people that are burnt out. They quit fishing. A lot of guides quit fishing about their third year in, fourth year in. They just pretty much don't fish anymore. They're kind of over the whole thing. Their drive's gone. They get kind of ornery, a lot of them. See a lot of drunks. I mean, it is what it is. It's a hard life. So, I knew a lot of guys, I mean, that were part-time guides when I was in Michigan, and their enthusiasm was like the day they started.
Right.
The guy that goes, you know, you get in these places where you can fish a lot. Like in Michigan, it was nothing. You could do 200 days in a row. I mean, you could, if you just planned it right, you could do that. And you'd be so freaking burnt out. It's a hard life. And it's up early, long days. You got everything afterwards, start it again. You know, it can be a little transient if it's very few places you can go one river every, which kind of gets boring too. But it's, guiding is, like you were saying, maybe guiding, it's one of those things where you can probably do both if you were really good at it. Maybe you're not going to, just supplementing your income. You're not going to be, can't part-time
it's
and make
like those,
a living. But
the guys I met on the MOF that are, they're all school teachers. They've got this, I think there's five of them, and they realized quickly there's no retirement in guiding.
No.
There's no, you know, there's no 401k
jump
matching
your,
in
jump
guiding.
Jump out of your boat and break your ankle.
Yeah. Then
gee,
what?
Guess what? Now. Yeah.
So they're all school teachers, and then they guide in the summer. So they've like really retained their love.
And that's
you
say, and they
river.
Don't guide every day usually either. Yeah. They're out doing it part-time.
Yep.
I've said it on the thing of the fireable offenses about, I don't really pay attention to my new guides. I don't watch them like a hawk until their third year. First year, I just see if they can speak. You know, hey, Bubba, and okay, you're out. And so the second year, are you still enthusiastic? The third year, if you quit fishing your third year, I fire you. Because you're on a career. You, at that point, you've lost your desire. You're probably going to get surly. Not always, but I don't take the chance. I don't want him around.
Scotty Hall, we talk about Scotty all the time as the epitome of class and grace and all that you should be.
And look at him. He schedules himself.
He schedules himself. And, you know, the guy looks easily 25 years younger than his age.
Yeah.
And you know what he said the other night? We're all watching football at his place. He goes, I think I'm going to get one of them spay rods so I can hang out with you hooligans after work.
still likes to fish.
Likes to fish, and he's like interested in learning new stuff. I mean, it takes a rare cat to, I think, do that. And, you know, obviously I'm not speaking from a place of experience. I'm new to all this, but
I've got a little experience.
I know you
so
do.
It's,
and a lot of what I reference is things I've heard from you.
I don't think, it's a pretty bold statement, but I can tell you three or four people that I know that are 30 to 40 year guides who still like to fish.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I don't know. And it's a really hard life once you don't love it. It's a really hard life. You're dealing with lots of personalities, inclement weather. And this weekend, we're on the fourth weekend of streamer schools. Last weekend, it went from being 90 to it was supposed to go and just start raining and snowing and crapping all over us. Didn't quite, but you know, that takes a toll on you.
Yeah.
When all of a sudden you've been out but so is 90 degree temperatures. But
yeah.
It just, everything has its ups and downs, but the people who do it right, the ones that I see that regret, that would, to me, regret in life is really, it is the saddest thing I see in dealing with people like we do, right?
Yeah.
And they show up and, you know, they're 75 and they can't wade the river as well or at all. And you'll see, and you can just see the sadness that they made. It's not as sad. They love their life. They love their wife and kids and all that stuff. But as Madison said, it's funny that this turned full circle and that Madison said, love grows bigger in small houses. Well, you know, maybe the happiest people I know did what they like to do. And maybe you don't have a 10,000 square foot house and you don't have two or three other houses all over the place, but you enjoyed what you did your whole life.
Yeah.
And nobody, you know, by the way, that's kind of a bullshit term too. Nobody loves everything every freaking day. You know, nobody's going to love, I mean, somebody might, I don't know, but you just... I was thinking of one guy that might, but there's just
nope. The hedgehog.
Yeah, and so nobody. It's not nothing's always roses. Nothing's easy. But VSL used to tell me they want to start a fly shop. Oh, so you can work 7 days a week the rest of your life. Yeah. I think people think you get in a fly shop and you'd start put a pot of coffee on, hang out and drink coffee all day. One of the guys in streamer school, Alan, was telling me about a buddy of his that ended up selling all his businesses, but. He said, he says, you know, I just, all I really want is just to hang out and talk to guys. And he says, well, there's also this part of called business that's there that somehow the shit that you got around you's got to get here and it's got to get sold. You got to get inventory.
You got to count beans.
You got a staff. Oh, yeah. Those things. Yeah. Okay. Right. Great. But no, but it's never perfect. But that's why you want to get what you want early. Just go out and see. You know, that old saying, if you like what you do, you'll never work a day in your life. It's total bullshit. Everything's work.
Everything's work.
You know, but you don't get anywhere if you don't work your ass off and you don't pay some price. Everybody pays prices. But it's really hard to do later.
Yeah.
We've said that about 10 times.
I remember talking to my dad and a couple of his buddies when I was in college and trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And I had no idea. So I just got kind of a general finance degree. But I asked them, you know, do you love what you do? And the kind of the general consensus I heard back is I like what I do. And that, you know, if you like about, you know, 70 to 80% of what you do on a daily basis, you're probably in the right job. You're probably, you know, and I think about that with my current role and like, obviously my job is unique. I don't think there's a lot of ones
so
out there.
So lucky. Like you hang out with me all the time.
Absolutely. And, but I, you know, I was going through it and I'm like, yeah, I genuinely enjoy most of what I do. Hanging out with Kelly sucks. Editing videos is really fun, except for when they're Euronymphing videos. I despise them and I can't do it. So there's my 20% I hate.
Howard won't be nice to you.
Sorry, Howard.
Back.
Howard knows. Yes. I think Howard might even agree. All right, let's wrap it up. David was in here today, and he's like, so that last one was kind of weird. You guys didn't do anything behind the desk or band of the week, and I didn't even realize.
We didn't.
So my bad. I'm running out of bands. I keep looking through my music.
I was thinking about that the other day. It's almost like you got to go to songs, but there's still more.
Let's go songs. Why don't we do song of the week?
Song?
We'll get a lot of mileage out of this.
Oh, you could go forever.
Oh, yeah, go for it.
No, go ahead.
Oh, I mentioned it today. I'm going Bob Fudge, Coulter Wall. Such a good tune.
I had Coulter Wall to be as my band of the week.
Was it? Yeah.
Yeah, because I had him put him on my...
He's got new music coming out soon.
That thing you showed me?
Spotify.
Yeah, yep. Put him on my Spotify thing.
But, yeah, I got my dad on Coulter Wall. He's digging him now.
We're going song, too? I'll just stick with Coulter this time, then we'll have song.
Coulter, yeah.
So, behind the desk thing, though, I already did it because I got Richie's deal, but I had something else. What was it? I don't remember. I think it was just that new... As you can see, I'm a big fan of... I did get another diver thing from one of the Navy divers up here.
Ooh, cool.
So that's my second one.
Right on.
But that was pretty... Oh, shit. And oh, but... And then, so, yeah, I've got a... And I mentioned Richie's stuff, so that was new. This... my flatfish. That's my new one. So, but I can't really display this because, oh, look it right on there. Fly rod.
Flatfish. Yeah, that's cool.
Fly rod, flatfish, Detroit, Michigan.
Flatfish.
I would like to know how much money this thing made over its career. And it'd be
a couple
bajillions.
Bucks.
It was one of the top selling lures in history for a while because it's a bunch of sizes. So it's got to go up there. That'll be behind the desk thing. Thanks, Don. It's going to go up there somewhere. We're getting out of business or out of space. And by the way, we asked this before. If we put the new studio up, what do we do? Do we shoot there? Do we move this? Do we move? I don't know.
Yeah. Let us know in the comments because we want to build a studio that has like real podcast mics. We can bring more people in because I'm sure people are sick of listening to
you.
Me. Probably not Kelly, but me.
Yeah,
bring some new blood. And where we can do kind of, you know, we got mic problems, the whole deal, but, you know, where we've got better sound quality and everything. But this is kind of a legendary space. So,
yeah. As Brian Fletching said, it's the most iconic fly tying desk in the world.
Yeah.
Because it's really the only, nobody really ties it
at a
space. Right?
It's unique.
Like Charlie and Davey tying, you know.
They set up in pretty like clean, they bring the materials in and tie.
Davey ties in his house, I think. And, you know, Charlie ties in the room in the back.
Yeah.
But it's not really a tying desk.
Right.
You know, so, and that's, you know, this thing's been around forever. But it's not this. That was for the tying. For the podcast, it could be anything.
Yeah.
But it would be, I don't know, there's just a lot of shit back there. Now we got to move it. Do we? It's hard. It's like.
Change is hard.
Yeah.
Change is weird. Let us know in the comments.
It'd be hard for me, too, because if I had to sit there without shit to mess with.
Oh, no, we'll have some shit for you.
Every once in a while, I'll watch one of these things, right? And I'm like, that guy's got Tourette's. He's like, whoa, you know, picking around like, whoa, I'm bored here.
Have you seen how many times I've unscrewed and screwed that back on today?
I mean,
problems too.
I kept telling myself, I watched one and I said, how many times do you have to sit back in your chair? About 30.
Right? That's what we're also unsure if we could actually put Kelly on a boom mic because he might just back away forward.
Hello.
It's all over the place.
Yeah, we'll see.
So yeah, we'll see. Let us know in the comments. And then the other thing I'm supposed to do is I'm supposed to kick you in the shin. Jeff Peterson told me I should do that so that you've got something to be pissed off about.
Oh, we didn't ask what's pissed off about.
Yeah, we've kind of gotten away from that. I don't like making Kelly angry because it normally ends up with him yelling at me.
Well, now that you're getting closer to the center where you belong.
Morning you came in firing off that political stuff? I don't know what you're talking about. Nope, not biting on that one.
Yes. Well, if you don't know, you don't know. But yeah, keep anybody's got a suggestion. I was thinking about we were going to build another studio, but it's still got to have character.
Yeah, it won't be...
No, I can't have one of them shit like
that. Sterile. It won't be sterile. There's going to be...
shit when I'm just like...
There will be so wood. Bored. I liked that one at the Wretched Mess with all that kind of like live wood behind us.
Yeah.
That was cool. I don't know. We'll percolate.
Did you tell you what Robin said about that? Mm-mm. Chip's way? And she said she was watching it and we were standing there. She kept waiting for... nutsack to fall out of my pants.
Oh, my God.
I said, what? Mel thought I had sexy legs. And I said, she goes, you two and your, so whoever, so yeah, this is.
You remember the guy who
the
said.
The other guy said the same thing. I said, well, shit.
You two ladies wear, with your cross legs.
Yeah, we can never wear shorts again in 95 degree weather. And it was like, but she said, hers was kind of getting out there a little bit.
She says,
I kept turning my head. I said, my ass.
Yeah.
You did not.
All right, well, with that, let's wrap it up.
We're not pissed off today.
Nope. Well, thanks for watching, and we'll see you next week.
Hope you like it. I hope it helps you out.